Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And, you know, I think we've got Paul with us again, folks. And thank you again for coming back and helping with this whole process.
Thanks.
And so there's no doubt in my mind that you may have a lingering question or some concerns or something, I don't know, regarding what we've just recently read.
Well, it is, you know, we addressed something earlier about Mohammedans, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense that... Hang on, I just lost it. I'm too young to have senior moments, but I just had one. So let's go on, GR, and it'll come back to me.
Okay. So what you're gonna read next is going to contradict everything that we've just said, or what seems like it is going to contradict what I basically said. And the reason why is I will tell you afterwards. I think it's important for you to hear him, because you got to understand that based on the Constitution itself as it laid out, Congress had not made any laws yet. Congress has not actually put the fences up that was necessary, and that would be basically, you got to understand that the divine hand of providence was guiding them in this entire process.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why this is why we, you know, Thanksgiving, the first Thanksgiving of the nation, was literally service to him. It wasn't feasting and gorging. But anyway, so we'll answer the questions coming back, because he's going to point out some stuff that there's laws that he wasn't even made aware of, and further knowledge that came from the Lord, or inspiration that came from the divine hand of providence, clearly helped them put the fences necessary to protect us. So go ahead.
Okay, so this is still Mr. Iredell.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Read all of this, okay, and then we'll answer all questions.
All right. Okay. But it is objected that the people of America perhaps choose representatives who have no religion at all, and that pagans and Mohammedans may be admitted into offices. But how is it possible to exclude any set of men without taking away that principle of religious freedom which we ourselves so warmly contend for? This is the foundation on which persecution has been raised in every part of the world. The people in power were always right and everybody else wrong. If you admit the least difference, the door to persecution is opened. Nor would it answer the purpose, for the worst part of the excluded sects would comply with the test, and the best men only be kept out of our councils. But it is never to be supposed that the people of America will trust their dearest rights to persons who have no religion at all, or religion materially different from their own. It would be happy for mankind if religion was permitted to take its own course and maintain itself by the excellence of its own doctrines. The divine author of our religion never wished for its support by worldly authority. He has not said that the gates of hell shall not prevail. Has he not said that the gates of hell shall not prevail against it? It made much greater progress for itself than when supported by the greatest authority upon earth. Whoa. That's a whoa. Religion should stand on its own. And he makes a great argument for not having government support of religion, and why?
I'm sorry. I muted myself.
Okay. I wondered if I had gotten disconnected or something.
No. So, yeah, you did on my end. So I apologize, folks. Yeah. So the law that needed to be passed was the law of citizenship, of establishing that the supreme law of the land must be embraced by all citizens, that all citizens must be willing to take up arms, to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. In creating that law right there, they made it impossible for a Mohammedan to be admitted into office. They made it impossible for a Mohammedan to actually become a citizen, because many of these guys didn't have the insights of all the framers. They all had not read the Quran and all these other things. And so when you look at the requirement, the religious requirement, and, you know, I'm not trying to be disparaging. You know, you can go and have your, you know, caliphate or whatever. You know, you can have your theocracy somewhere else, but not here. We're not having that. We have full liberty, full individual liberty and individual sovereignty. We do not and cannot and will not have a theocracy. So without having a lot too much dead air, because I caused some of that myself. Go ahead. What questions do you still have, or I haven't answered, or what?
All right. So question, if you have, this, you said they should have made a law.
They did. They actually did. They made the citizenship and the citizen. They created the, I want to say it was 1792 when they established what a U.S. citizen was and the oath of a citizen.
Oh, I see. So in other words, at the time this was being said, they hadn't created the law.
Correct.
But subsequently, they did.
Yes. And apparently, the divine hand of providence kind of guided them, because I don't think they realized. I don't think they knew. I don't think that they could even imagine that this country and the inhabitants thereof would be so illiterate and so perverted that we would actually be doing and deliberately engaging where people of this country are allowing and participating in the shredding of the Constitution.
So I think we're all anxious to know what this law is.
Which law?
The one that they made. The one that you were talking about.
Okay, so it's the law of citizenship. For you to become a citizen, even to this day, as a matter of fact, Obama tried to change it somewhat, and he couldn't get what he wanted, but they did make some minor changes to the citizenship law, and you can actually go and look at it. But the oath of the citizen, which is a legally binding requirement.
Ah, that... So I wanted to, yeah, that is what I wanted to refer to earlier. So, yeah, I want to oath of the citizen. So you say 1792, they established this. Is that correct?
Right. It was the standards of citizenship. And this is where they created these rules of, you know, different statuses of people where you could be an inhabitant. You didn't have to necessarily be a citizen, but you couldn't participate in voting. You had no protections under the law. You were just an inhabitant. Just stay out of our way and we'll tolerate you. So, yeah. So I don't want to create a lot of dead space. We might as well just move on. Mr. Iredell, actually it was Mr. Abbott, yes, that then makes the next comment. And then it's Mr. Iredell, and then it's, you know, goes on and on. But let's pick up, because they talk extensively. Even the governor weighs into this. And keep in mind now that I've already told you, that Congress had yet to make this law. So this was kind of shock value, because people were saying, I can't imagine a Mohammedan being, you know, even here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about, you know, this was going to be such a land of liberty that we could, you know, endure this. And yes, those people probably could have, because they were honorable men of integrity and so forth. They probably would never have allowed a Mohammedan to actually become president. But it was reasonable in their time. But they couldn't fathom how important it would have been to have these laws to demand the loyalty and the undaunted support of the Constitution of all U.S. citizens. You don't have a choice.
Okay. So, religion. So, this is Mr. Abbott.
Right.
after expressing his obligations for the explanation which had been given, observed that no answer had been given to the question he put concerning the form of an oath. Mr. Iredell responds, Mr. Chairman, I beg pardon for having omitted to take notice of that part which the worthy gentleman has mentioned. It was by no means from design, but from its having escaped my memory, as I have not the conveniency of taking notes. I shall now satisfy him in that particular in the best manner in my power. According to the modern definition of an oath, it is considered a solemn appeal to the Supreme Being for the truth of what is said by a person who believes in the existence of the Supreme Being and in a future state of rewards and punishments according to that form which will bind his conscience most. It was long held that no oath could be administered but upon the New Testament, except to a Jew who was allowed to swear upon the Old. According to this notion, none but Jews and Christians could take an oath, and heathens were altogether excluded. At length, by the operation of principles of toleration, these narrow motions were done away. Men at length considered that there were many virtuous men in the world who had not had an opportunity of being instructed either in the Old or New Testament, who yet very sincerely believed in a Supreme Being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. It is well known that many nations entertain this belief who do not believe either in the Jewish or Christian religion. Indeed, there are few people so grossly ignorant or barbarous as to have no religion at all. And if none but Christians or Jews could be examined upon oath, many innocent persons might suffer for want of the testimony of others. In regard to the form of an oath, that ought to be governed by the religion of the person taking it. I remember to have read an instance which happened in England, I believe in the time of Charles II. A man who was a material witness in a cause refused to swear upon the book, and I think he means the Bible.
Yep.
And was admitted to swear with his uplifted hand. The jury had a difficulty in crediting him, but the judge, Chief Justice, told them he had, in his opinion, taken as strong an oath as any of the other witnesses. Though he had been to swear himself, he should have kissed the book. A very remarkable instance also happened in England about 40 years ago of a person who was admitted to take an oath according to the rites of his own country. Though he be a heathen, he was an East Indian. He had a great suit in Chancery, and his answer upon oath to a bill filed against him was absolutely necessary. Not believing either in the Old or New Testament, he could not be sworn in the accustomed manner, but was sworn according to the form of the Gentoo religion, which he professed by touching the foot of a priest. It appeared that, according to the tenets of this religion, its members believed in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishment. It was accordingly held by the judges upon great consideration that the oath ought to be received. They considered that it was probable those of that religion were equally bound in conscience by an oath according to their form of swearing as they themselves were by one of theirs, and that it would be a reproach to the justice of the country if a man, merely because he was of a different religion from their own, should be denied redress of an injury he had sustained. Ever since this great case, it has been universally considered that in administering an oath, it is only necessary to inquire if the person who is to take it believes in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. Let me break here for just a minute.
Go ahead.
Isn't that a religious test? Believing in a supreme being?
Yes. But okay, it's not a religious test itself. In other words, you have to swear, because what does the Constitution say? It says, shall be bound by oath or affirmation. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you either have to take an oath, you know, and you basically read that oath, or you have to, you know, swear by affirmation, or you have to do affirmation, which is a mm-hmm. legal process where you will support this Constitution. In other words, you look at an oath as a religious act.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it's basically like you just asked. So the question is there another way to actually swear to, you know, the Constitution? And it says right there, shall be bound by oath or affirmation,
Right.
to support this Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. And as a matter of fact, if you really read the definition of affirmation, the assertion mm-hmm. that the testimony one gives is true and equivalent to that which could be given while under oath. And as a matter of fact, many people will tell you it is more legally binding than the oath itself.
Right. Let me give an example, because over years of reading the scriptures, I've always felt if I were to be admitted to office, I would prefer to do an affirmation than an oath. That's just, we're not at all. So that's occurred to me. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, so I don't make that much of, you know, I believe in significance. I believe that things are, you know, for purposes and so forth. And mm-hmm. I look at, you know, the oath, because I swore to an oath. I did not feel the necessity of affirming my mm-hmm. allegiance to serve this country as a Marine. So, in other words, I had no problem taking the oath right. and basically raising my arm to the square and basically asserting and swearing to an oath and then signing it. I mean, it's...
Sure.
Instead of putting my arm to the square, I'm equally and legally bound by signing an affirmation.
Right.
So,
interestingly, I want to share this also. We had on January, I believe it was the 2nd, the first day the Missouri legislature met, I went to the state house because I wanted to visually watch them take the oath. And one of the things that I noticed is after they took the oath, they were instructed to sign it and leave it on their desk. And that if they didn't sign it, it wasn't valid. Okay. So I thought that was just as an aside, I thought that was pretty, very interesting.
Oh yeah. So it's not only they not only sign it, but it has to be witnessed. So the whole process is that they sign it and then the witness or the, you know, whoever's giving it signs that mm-hmm. that oath was administered. In other words, there's a legal document that is created that this person has taken the oath. They signed that they've actually taken the oath, and somebody who has the authority will affirm or basically, you know, sign and, you know, acknowledge the fact that this was a legitimate oath.
Right. Correct.
So okay. This goes back to a question I asked, and I'm not sure if you remember. I've brought this up before, and the audience has heard this before. What was the very first act of Congress? The regulating of the oath.
The what? Oh, sure.
The regulation and the regulating of the oath of office. You know, who would have the authority to do the swearing in and all of that, the affirming and so forth. And so that's how important. I mean, you know, you figure, well, okay, you know, most people would say, we got to get a budget, you know, or, you know, we got to get the military straight. Or you know, there's a thousand different directions they could have gone. And the first thing that they focused on was the oath. That's my point.
Wow.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Are you ready to go on?
I am, absolutely.
Okay. It is, however, necessary that such a belief should be entertained, because otherwise there would be nothing to bind his conscience that could be relied on, since there are many cases where the terror of punishment in this world for perjury could not be dreaded. I have endeavored to satisfy the committee. We may, I think, very safely leave religion to itself. And as to the form of the oath, I think this may well be trusted to the general government to be applied on the principles I have mentioned. So the point he was making here is that people would take the oath because they had a conviction that their deeds in this life would be rewarded or punished in the next. And that seemed to be a universal understanding among the founders.
Yeah, so that's a universal understanding of anybody in religion, because, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you do, you are held... Most people in religion believe there's a judgment day.
Right.
Most religions believe in a judgment, which means we will be held accountable. Did we lie? Were we deceptive? will be accountable for what these things are sins, and this would be a sin.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So now Governor Johnston. Now the governor kicks in. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Governor Johnston expressed great astonishment that the people were alarmed on the subject of religion. This, he said, must have arisen from the great pains which had been taken to prejudice men's minds against the Constitution. He begged leave to add the following few observations to what had been so ably said by the gentleman last up. I read the Constitution over and over, but could not see one clause of apprehension or jealousy on this subject. When I heard there were apprehensions that the Pope of Rome could be the President of the United States, I was greatly astonished. It may as well be said that the King of England or France or the Grand Turk could be chosen to that office. It would have been as good an argument. It appears to me that it would have been dangerous if Congress could intermediate with the subject of religion. True religion is derived from a much higher source than human laws. When any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's consciences, no good consequence can possibly follow. It is apprehended that Jews, Mohammedans...
Forgive me.
Go ahead.
What I want to say right here is what he just said is true religion is derived from a much higher source than human laws. When any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's consciences, no good consequence can possibly follow. We see today how government is trying to constrain consciences. And they're trying to basically shame people. They're trying to basically, you know, mandate and say, you don't have a right to, you know, to question what we're doing. You have to trust our science.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to point this out. We're actually seeing no good government would ever do that. Go ahead.
Right. And no good consequences are following. Right? Okay. It is apprehended that Jews, Mohammedans, pagans, etc., may be elected to high offices under the government of the United States. Those who are Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to the office of president or other high office, but in one of two cases. First, if the people of America lay aside the Christian religion altogether, it may happen. Should this unfortunately take place, the people will choose such men as they think as they do themselves. Another case is, if any persons of such description should, notwithstanding their religion, acquire the confidence and esteem of the people of America by their good conduct and practice of virtue, they may be chosen. I leave it to gentlemen's candor to judge what probability there is of the people's choosing men of different sentiments from themselves.
And so it's clear that the governor didn't understand that Congress would actually be able to establish a requirement that the supreme law of the land could not be succumbed to a theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
That no religion at all, no law respecting religion would be made in this country, and that no person could actually try to invoke, you know, any type of religious law on any square inch of this country. And we see it now where it is, those principles are being violated and the law is being violated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, great apprehension. I just one little rant. It annoys me. And we've only got 15 seconds left, so I have another reason to stop. It just annoys me to know that the clarity that we really provide on this show, you know, that we wouldn't be the top-rated show. You know, I look and I go, okay, it just comes to reason. So we'll be right back after this, Paul. It comes to reason, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, people want entertainment. People don't want the truth. It is just air apparent that you know, people reject these types of shows, this type of meaning, because it contradicts the bad inculcation, the bad education they've received. And anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so bringing Paul back, I know that I sometimes communicate poorly. And as a matter of fact, Paul, you've been one that has corrected me in my vernacular, my use, or the way I present the idea. But very few, very, very rarely am I wrong. And when I am wrong, I will admit I'm wrong. Like when I made the assertion that the governor of North Dakota had a $2 billion, campaign purse when he only had $2 million. But
okay.
I concede, and I actually go out of my way to say I was wrong. So, I guess that isn't appealing to most people. They would rather hear opinions. In other words, more people would probably rather turn on the radio so that they can live and exist in an echo chamber, so they can hear the ideas and thoughts that they agree with, instead of having to learn and reprogram themselves to the truth. That takes work. I understand, hey, we got, Republicans and Democrats, we got conservatives and liberals, and it's a conflict of, conservative big government or liberal big government. And
right.
And they have no idea how they're a huge part of the problem. Anyway, so this is my condition. This is my state that, I may not be the most eloquent. I know I'm not entertaining, but it doesn't matter. When you can't refute what I'm saying, and it's not even what I'm saying, it's what these men are saying.
It's amazing.
It is.
What they're saying.
It is amazing. And most, I would think that more people would be, I can't wait to hear what he's going to read next. What we're going to learn, what we're going to hear from Madison, or in this case, Mr. Johnston, Governor Johnston. So, okay, so go ahead and pick it back up.
So we're finishing with Governor Johnston.
Yes.
But great apprehensions have been raised, as to the influence of the eastern states. When you attend this to circumstances, this will have no weight. I know but two or three states where there is the least chance of establishing any particular religion. The people of Massachusetts and Connecticut are mostly Presbyterians. In every other state, the people are divided into a great number of sects. In Rhode Island, the tenets of the Baptists, I believe, prevail. In New York, they are divided very much. The most numerous are the Episcopalians and the Baptists. In New Jersey, they are as much divided as we are. In Pennsylvania, if any sect prevails more than others, it is that of the Quakers. In Maryland, the Episcopalians are most numerous, though there are other sects. In Virginia, there are many sects. You all know what their religious sentiments are. So in all the southern states, they differ, as also in New Hampshire. I hope, therefore, that gentlemen will see there's no cause of fear that any one religion shall be exclusively established. The term they also used for religion was typically denomination.
Yes, yes. And so when they use the word secular, right, right. So the usage of secular was non-denominational. When they used the word secular, it wasn't godless. their application, the vernacular, how they use that word in its meaning was non-denominational. In other words, I'm a Christian without a, you know, an affinity towards one, you know, one faith or another.
Okay.
And yeah. And actually, Thomas Jefferson was not a deist. He was labeled as a deist, but he was actually, you know, a Christian without an affinity towards a denomination because, again, I've said this before, when he after he read Sir Isaac Newton's book about the revelations of Daniel and John, the Revelator, and prophecies of them, and he, clearly it was stated that by Sir Isaac Newton that he didn't believe that the true church existed. And here's a guy who was working in the Church of France. I mean, his employer was the church.
Go ahead. Is there an instance you told me in which because Jefferson had trouble in a court case because he was non-denominational?
Yes, correct.
Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, so he was charged with abandoning his post as governor because who's the guy? Benedict Arnold. And British forces basically drove him out of Monticello and sent him west into the mountains. So he fled for his life on the day he was supposed to have ridden into Richland to basically turn over the governorship to the new governor. And the new governor just took offense, didn't like him. Yeah, and so when the judge came in and basically the officers and the witnesses and everybody, you know, were sitting there present for the judge to hear the case, because I don't think he had at that point a trial by jury. But the judge, the first thing he did was he basically called all of the officers of the court and Thomas Jefferson forward. And apparently the judge had a conversation with the sheriff before he went into the proceedings, and the sheriff had told him that Mr. Jefferson was not a Christian in good standing because he wasn't going to church regularly. And so if you didn't go to church regularly, then they had a problem with whether you could be credible on the stand or not. And so he said, because you're an officer of this court, I will allow you to ask questions and cross-examine, but I will not allow you to bear testimony. And so he could not bear testimony in his own behalf. And that was because he just didn't feel that his testimony had credibility because he was not in good standing. So, yeah, and that was just one of many cases. Alexis de Tocqueville accounted for that in 1833 in Democracy in America, that this similar case happened in New York. Well, actually, that guy was an atheist, and this is when the atheists started really surfacing in America, trying to test and trying to be martyrs in America to change the sentiments of the people to say, you know, that guy's really a good guy, you know, and the devil seems like a pretty good guy. When the devil comes into the room, nine times out of ten, he's going to be very nice or what have you, and he's going to tell you the truth, except that one little lie. And that's how it starts. But anyway, anyhow.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So I guess we're picking up with Mr. Caldwell.
Yep, okay. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Caldwell thought that some danger might arise. He imagined it might be objected to in a political as well as in a religious view. In the first place, he said, there was an invitation for Jews and pagans of every kind to come among us. Let me stop here again. There was a concern about Jews this time?
Yes. Yeah, there was no state in the Union that I know of allowed Jews to openly practice.
What?
That's right. Yeah, I talk about this in my first book, that there were laws that actually forbade Jews from openly practicing. I think there may have been only, by the time of the Constitution, there may have been only one or two states that allowed it. Massachusetts actually kept it outlawed until 1833.
Hey, that's more than 50 years.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right. So let me go on. I just, you know, I may have seen that before, but it kind of struck me. So
sure, go ahead.
All right. At some future period, said he, This might endanger the character of the United States. Moreover, even those who do not regard religion acknowledge that the Christian religion is best calculated of all religions to make good members of society on account of its morality. I think then, added he, that in a political view, those gentlemen who formed the Constitution should not have given this invitation to Jews and heathens. All those who have any religion are against the immigration of those people from the Eastern Hemisphere. That's pretty strong language, T.R.
Sure, yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay, Mr. Spencer goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Spencer was an advocate for securing every unalienable right and that of worshiping God according to the dictates of conscience in particular. He therefore thought that no one particular religion should be established. Religious tests, said he, have been the foundation of persecutions in all countries. Persons who are conscientious will not take the oath required by religious tests and will therefore be excluded from offices, though equally capable of discharging them as any member of the society. It is feared, continued he, that persons of bad principles, deists, atheists, etc., may come into this country, and there is nothing to restrain them from being eligible to offices. He asked if it was reasonable to suppose that the people would choose men without regarding their characters. Mr. Spencer then continued thus. Gentlemen urge that the want of a test admits the most vicious characters to offices. I desire to know what test could bind them. If they were such principles, it would not keep them from enjoying those offices. On the other hand, it would not exclude from offices, it would exclude from offices conscientious and truly religious people, though equally capable as others. Conscientious persons would not take such an oath and would therefore be excluded. Conscientious persons would not take what oath? Okay, I'm baffled by the sentence.
The oath of office.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying would not take such an oath.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did I miss something?
Yeah, so on the other hand, it would be excluded from off. So you got to back up. You got to read a little faster and put it together. If there were such principles, it would not keep them from enjoying those offices. On the other hand, it would exclude from offices conscientious and truly religious people, though equally capable as others. Conscientious persons would not take such an oath and would be therefore excluded. So they're missing it.
Okay.
Is the oath required for you to go into office? But based on what they're saying, they're misreading this and saying that there's only one way to go into office, that you have to take an oath.
Right.
Now, we already covered the other way is an affirmation, a legal process, right?
Okay.
But they're not talking about the affirmation. There's been no amendment to the Constitution that has changed that. So the language of the oath and affirmation has always been there, but they just missed it.
Oh. So here's what he says. Conscientious persons would not take such an oath. Almost like I said earlier, you know, that I considered that I might prefer to take an affirmation instead of swearing an oath, because it can be taken in scripture that an oath should be avoided.
Right.
Is that what he's saying here?
Yeah. They haven't even put the affirmation on the table. It's almost like there's either this or nothing.
Okay.
Did you see my point? In other words, it's kind of like I see these memes in social media about taxation's a problem. It's a big scam. Taxation, it's theft, and it's the greatest scam that they've ever done. And, you know, actually, that is the most misleading, and it really gets people to, it just proves to the fact that nobody understands the real problem, because taxation's never been the problem. It's been unconstitutional spending.
Right.
Unconstrained spending. They only have the authority to spend on those few things that they can spend on. And so the reason they're taxing us is because they're spending money like a drunken sailor, and that's actually disrespectful to a drunken sailor. So
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So I'll pick up here on this sentence, and then I'll move on. On the other hand, it would exclude from offices conscientious and truly religious people, though equally capable as others. Conscientious persons would not take such an oath and would be therefore excluded. This would be a great cause of objection to a religious test. But in this case, as there is not a religious test required, it leaves religion on the solid foundation of its own inherent validity without any connection with temporal authority, and no kind of oppression can take place. I confess it strikes me so. I am sorry to differ from the worthy gentleman. I cannot object to this part of the Constitution. I wish every other part was as good and proper. So, Governor Johnston comes back, approved of the worthy member's candor. He admitted a possibility of Jews, pagans, etc. They put Jews and pagans in the same sentence. He admitted a possibility of Jews, pagans, etc., immigrating to the United States, yet he said they could not be in proportion to the immigration of Christians who should come from other countries, that in all probability the children even of such people would be Christians, and that this, with the rapid population of the United States, their zeal for religion and love of liberty would be trusted, add to the progress of the Christian religion among us.
So actually, Congress, after they assumed authority over the migration of persons, when was that? Mm-hmm. When? What year was that when they assumed that authority?
Probably as soon as
1808.
1808. Oh yes. Oh, that authority. Yes, 1808.
Right, and so when Congress assumed that authority, then Congress actually started dictating that only specific, I mean, that's why it was European Christians that were coming to America. They actually wanted to avoid conflict. Right? And so somehow, you know, when the framers, the people that actually understood the Constitution, created this, you know, this direction that we wanted to kind of maintain our culture and not necessarily allow people that were going to come here and try to shred us. It's just antithetical to invite the enemy to live among you.
Okay.
And so, I mean, even the scriptures tell us that, not to allow the enemy to live in our house. And so when we look at, you know, the Supreme Court actually ruling that, oh, you know, they can't rule. I mean, that came up with Trump, because Trump was basically saying that, you know, these people from, you know, Islamic countries, even though they were all Islamic countries, they couldn't migrate here for different purposes, what have you. The Supreme Court or the federal court system slapped his hand and said, you can't do that. Hold on here. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the framers did. What happened in the Constitution that said that we actually are forced to allow other religions to actually come here to try to subjugate us and try to not adhere to our laws? In other words, the Supreme Court and those people who made those judgments should actually be removed from office because they failed to support the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Because whether you like it or not, the Constitution mandates that, you know, we should actually, you know, maintain or continue allowing people to immigrate here and making them citizens. And the federal courts have actually said, hey, these people can be citizens, which is a direct conflict with the supreme law of the land and the laws that are in pursuant to it, that you must and you cannot be a proponent for a theocracy. Mm-hmm. You cannot. You have to support the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and be willing to defend it with your life. And in other words, they're saying, no, that's not true. We're going to allow our own enemies to come in so that they don't have to. I mean, they've actually, these judges and these types of decisions have been treasonous. And I know this seems really radical, folks, but it's not. It's not. And we still have the opportunity to get things right. Now, I know that when Christ comes, things will change. But until he does, We have an obligation and a responsibility to protect this governing. And so when we, you've heard me say, you know, we need to open up America and admit all these different states into the union. And absolutely we need to, but we cannot open it up to a state that is practicing Islam. I mean, they would literally have to go, and I would think that any, you know, Islamic state or any state that is predominant with that, they would have to go, you know, I would just say a generation or two proving that they're not. You know, you got to, it's like establishing credibility. And more importantly, they did actually demand that when states were coming into the union, that they were Christian, predominantly Christian, that they predominantly spoke English, and they actually held back, you know, certain states, I think, you know, for whatever reason, sometimes strategic, but, you know, Congress has this responsibility of protecting America and American interests and ensuring that no foreign influence or bad influence comes into America. That was the whole precedence. And today, today it's just like, you know, we're selling America off.
Right.
It's almost like we're done with you, America. And if you didn't realize it, you know, you're stupid. Because we've been committing warfare against you for decades now.
Generations.
And right. you've been stupid enough not to pick this up. Folks, right. it is now or never. I say that all the time. But keep going. Keep going.
Okay. So, Governor, let's see. The seventh article read without any objection against it. So apparently they read Article 7 and that was... and
the ratification, no discussion
Right. So now it's Governor Johnston, after a short speech, which was not distinctly heard, made a motion to the following effect. That this committee, having fully deliberated on the Constitution proposed for the future government of the United States of America by the Federal Convention lately held at Philadelphia on the 17th day of September last, and having taken it into their serious consideration, the present critical situation of America, which induces them to be of opinion that though certain amendments to the said Constitution may be wished for, yet that those amendments should be proposed subsequent to the ratification on the part of this state and not previous to it. They therefore recommend that the Constitution, the Convention do ratify the Constitution and at the same time propose amendments to take place on one of the modes prescribed by the, in one of the modes prescribed by the Constitution. Followed by Mr. Lenoir. What is commission? Oh, anti-federalist. Okay.
Yep. So questioning the commission of the delegates. Go ahead. And we have 5 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I conceive that I shall not be out of order to make some observations on this last part of the system and take some retrospective view of some other parts of it. I think it not proper for our adoption, as I consider that it endangers our liberties. When we consider this system collectively, we must be surprised to think that any set of men who were delegated to amend the Confederation should propose to annihilate it, for that and this system are utterly different and cannot exist together. It has been said that the fullest confidence should be put in those characters who formed this Constitution. We will admit them in private and public transactions to be good characters. But, sir, it appears to me and every other member of this committee that they exceeded their powers. Those gentlemen had no sort of power to form a new constitution altogether. Neither had the citizens of this country such an idea in their view. I cannot undertake to say what principles actuated them. I must conceive they were mistaken in their politics and that this system does not secure the unalienable rights of free men. It has some aristocratical and some monarchical features, and perhaps some of them intended the establishment of one of these governments. Whatever might be their intent, according to my views, it will lead to the most dangerous aristocracy that ever was thought of, an aristocracy established on a constitutional bottom. I conceive, and I believe most of this committee will likewise, that this is so dangerous that I should like as well to have no constitution at all. Their powers are almost unlimited. This is one. Was this guy asleep during the debates? First question.
No, so obviously he was so biased that it didn't matter how things were explained. He was adamant that they exceeded. He's like a John Bircher. They exceeded their commission, right?
Right. So this is one. That's the other thing I'm concerned. This is one of those guys that said they. You know, here we are in North Carolina at the end of the debates, and he still believes that the convention exceeded its commission to and throughout throughout the articles altogether.
Right. Right. So transitioning into his next focus, he says this, and then he says a bunch of other things then you're going to read, but he says this: a constitution ought to be understood by everyone. The most humbling and trifling characters in the country have a right to know what foundation they stand upon. I confess I do not see the end of the powers here proposed, nor the reasons for granting them. And so, in other words, he just feels like, and he's taking an anarchical position and or a position of the Articles of Confederation that were absolutely failing and begged for whatever necessary for the exigencies of fixing the Union so that they may be so that the Union can be preserved. Staying in the Confederacy, the Union would not be preserved, and this guy was in denial. And he didn't care, because we saw this in Massachusetts, where Massachusetts, the anti-Federalists were saying, you know, we're okay now. Let the rest of them join this constitutional republic, because we can thrive on our own. And so many of the states felt that way. Go ahead.
He actually dared to say that I should like as well to have no constitution at all. That sounds nearly anarchical.
Yes.
His position, his adamant about that seems to just, in my opinion, just kind of limit the value of his argument.
Right. So we have just a minute left. And so we can see where he kind of goes into the next tirade. And in this next one, he talks about the exclusive legislation. He kind of points on that and, you know, harangues that.
All right. You think I can get that in a minute?
No. We've got less than a minute now. So then he gets into slaves, and then we get into the commission again, exclusive legislation by Mr. Speight. We will be back tomorrow to kind of cover this. At least we're not looming with this concept of the oath of office and that people, you know, we can't respect religions that want to subjugate us to a theocracy. We cannot be subjugated by, you know, that type of religious freedom, because that is not religious freedom. That is antithetical to our religious freedom. And so, therefore, you know, this whole paradigm that the framers had, they were spot on. And this progressive paradigm, or I should say this evil paradigm that has come forth out of the federal courts, is unacceptable. Last word. 1 second.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to bring up your last word, because we are completely out of time at this point. So sorry about that, Paul. Last word was really just a last word. And forgive me. Anyway, folks, we will have Paul back tomorrow, and we will we'll get back into the North Carolina ratification debate. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.